Please be advised that in the following episode, we discuss police violence against Black communities, including murder, and trauma experienced by survivors of human trafficking.
You're listening to Decolonize Social Work, a conversation about social work, oppression, and liberation. I'm your co-host, Drew.
And I'm your co-host, Ondine. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to our podcast on Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth. And for anybody who is unfamiliar, Juneteenth is a holiday that commemorates the official ending of slavery in the United States. Well, not modern day slavery when we're talking about prisons.
And emancipation slavery.
Emancipation. Yeah, this was General Gordon Granger with the Union Army rolled into Galveston, Texas to declare that people who had been enslaved were now free. And that was in 1865, like a whole 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. So this is something that people in Texas are more familiar with, but it's something all over the country that we should celebrate. And I know you and I have talked about this, but it was never taught to me in Ohio.
Yeah, I was actually just tweeting about this earlier, how shameful it is that I was pretty late in learning about it. And I'm not like saying like shame on me or anything. And like, it's a symptom of a bigger system of white supremacy. So yeah, sadly.
So happy Juneteenth, everyone.
Yeah, happy Juneteenth.
That's probably the happiest part of this episode. We hadn't intended to record, I think, anything right now. We've got a lot going on. But it felt really important to continue the conversation we started with our episode ACAB, which I think we put out in October of last year.
It was when Tatiana Jefferson was murdered in her home by police officers. And we are here to talk about another Black woman who was murdered in her home by police officers, in addition to many other Black people who have been murdered by police.
By the police, state-sanctioned violence. I think actually more specifically we want to talk about in this movement right now, there is a call to replace, well, to defund police and replace police with social workers. So we want to dig in on that a little bit because we did in the last episode in ACAB talk a little bit about examples of this in different places. We want to go deeper.
Yeah, I think we had a good start of that of this conversation in that episode. So if you haven't listened to it, you know, go back and try it out. But yeah, there's a lot to talk about with this, and a lot of problems that are going to either continue to exist if you just, you know, replace social workers with police officers, and you're also going to create new problems.
So let's just set this up for some context. Although I hope everybody listening has been paying attention and knows what's going on. But the Minneapolis Police Department murdered George Floyd, about 2 months
May
ago?
May 25th.
And this is one of many police-inflicted homicides, I guess. But people are fed up.
Yeah, there is a whole ass rebellion happening right now.
Yeah, as there should be everywhere. So that's why this conversation is becoming more front and center about what to do with these police. And there have been folks working on abolition for a really long time. Miriam Kaba comes to mind, you know, an abolitionist organizer. Mm-hmm. I have appreciated seeing this conversation become more mainstream, but you know, when that happens, it gets co-opted sometimes by different people and it morphs and it changes. And I just want to lift up again that abolitionists have been talking about defunding the police for a long time. This is not new. It's just new to some people now. And there are probably a lot of folks who are like, what? We can't have a society without police.
The hypothetical question is like, well, what are you going to do with all the rapists? What are you going to do with the murderers?
Right. And how are we going to keep people safe? And
yeah.
You know, I will challenge you all to think about the fact that your imaginations may be a little atrophied, and this is a really good time to just kind of think about what a world would look like where we don't need these folks marauding in black and brown and poor communities. We already have an example of what it can look like to not have policing. Drive around in any white suburban neighborhood where people have, you know, money and resources to send their kids to camp and keep up their houses and invest in their schools. We already have a blueprint of what it looks like. Yeah. So don't act like this is brand new.
No, not at all.
I'm feeling a little like heated today.
Okay.
I just want to name that, like, you know, I may have some stress in my voice because I feel stressed about what's going on all around me.
You too. This is heated, though.
This is super heated. And I also just want to take a moment to all, like, our Black social workers, like, we see you.
Yeah. I think the other thing I want to acknowledge is that we're going to reference several things and talk about ideas. And you mentioned that this has been abolitionist work, been happening for a while. Community organizers have been doing this work for decades. Think of this as our platform to amplify that work that's done. Yeah. I don't want to take any claim or authorship of that. I don't have that. And again, this is the platform we have, and this is what we're doing with it. We're amplifying this work, this message, and hoping to push that out even further.
Yeah, yeah. Deep breaths. All okay, right. So let's dig in on this question of what are people calling for when they say defund the police, and why are people advocating for social workers to fill that void?
I think the first thread that comes back or comes through from our first episode about ACAB was the embedding of...
Can I just say, like, there might be people who are like, ACAB, and who are still wondering what that means.
Do you want to tell us what it means?
Yeah, I didn't want to before. I thought it was cheeky or something, but I kind of mean it. ACAB stands for All Cops Are Bastards.
Yep, All Cops Are Bastards.
It's a lot of vowels.
All Cops Are Bastards. The thread from the first one about social workers being embedded or employed within police departments as some kind of, I guess, if you were very optimistic, a harm reduction step, so that when these armed people respond to emergencies that aren't violent, I guess the social worker goes with them to provide the de-escalation, the actual humanity to those interventions. And some people are advocates for that.
Well, I remember some people, in the first episode, you talked about like your experience working in a domestic violence shelter and needing to do welfare checks on clients, and how like that was when you realized that the standard procedure was not for staff to go and check on them, but to send the police.
Yeah. And I think too, while thinking about that also, like, you know, if you respond to somebody who's doing who's maybe actively overdosing, and a cop and a social worker go there, like, it's great if they can save that person's life, but you know they're going to get tripped up. That person who's ODing is going to get tripped up in the legal system, because what if they have kids? They're going to all of a sudden start doing CPS and stuff like that. Like, this isn't, I don't know. I struggle with this being a solution. It's just like including another aspect of state violence, and it's not really community care.
Right. So let's pick that apart even more. I do think that there is something about, I mean, I believe that it is perhaps a little touch of harm reduction to switch social workers and police. If anything, because social workers won't show up and immediately kill you.
That is right. They aren't going to murder you in public.
As far as I know.
Not yet.
So I can't deny that. I'm sure there have been social workers who have done as much as they can to connect people to help and to keep them from, you know, being incarcerated. So I also don't want to just like completely disregard the people who find themselves in these roles who really want to do the best that they can. But also just lifting up that, like, the best that we can isn't good enough, and oftentimes can be actually more harmful.
You know, just because you have good intentions doesn't mean you don't still cause harm. We've talked about that a few times on this, and you probably, you know, if you are working to do a good social work, you know this already.
So Albuquerque, New Mexico just announced the formation of a new public safety department. So we're seeing these conversations about defunding the police all over the country, Minneapolis has decided to defund their police force. I don't know all the like nuts and bolts of that, but I know that that has really sent ripples throughout the country.
Yeah, and I think a couple of things to be vigilant about with that. One is that through a lot of strong police union bargaining, police departments are funded exorbitantly.
Yeah.
And I think one thing to still hold, to still demand to make your city officials accountable is to make sure that money, the equivalent amount of money, is sent to public services and community services and stuff. Don't just let, because we already know that social work's actively devalued. Community care, social services are really just not appreciated. So like in our instance, in our city, like the police department alone makes up 22% of this whole city budget.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like $84 million. And if you just, if you're going to take all that away from the police and move it to social workers, don't just say like, but you can do it on like 40. Because we're already underpaid and underappreciated for it. And I can see that happening too, because the people we've talked about before, formerly elected officials, think it's unskilled work.
Yeah.
And I think it's also imperative that like if cities are going to do this, you value this as much as you did your police departments.
So yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying, that there's no reason to think that if cities decided to employ social workers, that they would move over the police budget and invest that much money. But I also just want to name, though, in that like social services are fucked up anyway. So while they're underfunded, I think providing them more funding may or may not actually be helpful to people. And so like a very tangible example of that, or kind of let me get more clear, is that Dorothy Roberts, who's a professor of law and sociology and Africana studies at UPenn, has done a lot of writing and a lot of research around child protective services and social work and racism. And there's a article that I will share on our channels called Abolishing Police Also Means Abolishing Family Regulation. And just she goes on to say that she's really excited about these conversations about defunding the police and that she feels hopeful about that, as I do.
Yeah.
But that, you know, and, you know, because policing is not going to be fixed through reforms. If it was going to, it would have.
Yeah. Let's talk about that for a second, though, because in the United States, one of our biggest organizing bodies, the National Association of Social Workers, recently came out with a statement. And the statement was in a response to an executive order that Cult 45 came out with last week.
Oh my God, when you said that, I like for real thought about the malt liquor.
I mean, I think that's part of it.
You're talking about our president, air quotes.
I am, okay. Yeah. Also, props to Mariama Kaba, who on Twitter, that's the first person I saw refer to him that way. So yeah, but he had an executive order that's supposed to be police reform. And then the NASW came out with a statement about why this was inadequate. And it goes on to explain why and why. And then when it gets to what they would prefer to see, it's just a lot of other milquetoast reform demands about like banning no chokeholds or banning chokeholds, banning racial and religious profiling, which that right there, I'm like, if you do that, you kind of just take away the police. That's
so,
what
on,
they
on.
Do.
So the National Association of Social Workers has lifted up what they think are the priorities. And one of those is to, in police departments should just eliminate racial profiling.
Banning racial profiling and religious profiling. Banning no-knock warrants. Things like this that like...
Can I just say, I mean, it's incredible we're in a position where there's a conversation about having to ban chokeholds. Like, that's a thing we should have ever had. That's crazy talk. Well, it's crazy that we have that chokeholds.
We have to tell people to
not do that. We have to tell people that. But yeah, I'm with you that like these are, again, if the police departments could just like not racially profile, yes, you're right, we wouldn't need them. But also maybe they would have done that. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's so stupid.
If they wanted to not do this, they would be doing it already. And you can see this too. And this is a little bit of a divergence, but like this isn't just like the bad apple theory, right? Because you're seeing this so-called blue flu happening right now, where like the guy that killed Rayshard Brooks in a Wendy's parking lot by two cops, and those two cops were fired, and now there's like talk in that police department that all these cops are going to call in sick, or that in I forget where else it was, I saw that like several police officers, oh, the the two dudes who pushed that 75-year-old man, the two cops that pushed that 75-year-old man and cracked his skull and he's like can't walk anymore.
The guy who was at the protest.
Yeah. Those cops just got suspended. So 70-some-odd cops also just like kind of did the blue flu thing and just called in sick or quit their positions
as
and stuff.
As a protest
and solidarity that they should not be held to this accountability standard. You should be able to do it. So like they want this. And like I said, to your point, banning chokeholds and racial profiling, if they wanted to not do this, they would be doing it. They want, this is part of their job.
I don't think they could ban racial profiling.
I don't think they could either.
Because that is part of their job, is to racially profile people and arrest them.
Yeah.
I mean, police, as we know it, the origin of policing as we know it, it comes from the 1800s, 1700s, 1800s, with like these men coming together to be hired as slave catchers.
Yeah.
Like that's what police started as in our country.
Yeah, you've seen those photos that get that are online of like the kind of gold six-star badge that says slave patrol.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that gets into another discussion about how police have always been there to protect the property of white people.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was incredibly other human beings or what we're seeing now with like protecting Starbucks and Target or even, you know, between the end of like chattel slavery and now where, you know, the police were busting up labor unions because they were protesting the conditions at work and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of jumping around and, like I said, getting in a divergence, but...
So you were talking about the NASW's like crap response.
Right, and they're basically calling for this reform that, again and again, nobody that's actually been doing abolitionist work is saying will work. Like, are actively saying piecemeal reform does not work.
Yeah.
Like, that is the statement from the movement for Black Lives. That is the statement from Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. Yeah, if it was going to work, it would have.
So yeah, bringing it back to the statement that the NASW put out with about the president's executive order about police reform, the NASW president also responded to an op-ed that was originally written in the Wall Street Journal, and the NASW president, Angelo McLean, wrote this response because, there was an op-ed written on June 8th by Naomi Schaefer Riley about "Are Social Workers the Answer?" and about how this plays into abolishing the police and goes into the complicity of social workers when working with police officers in the realm of child welfare. We did a whole episode about child welfare how awful the social work profession can be in that setting, how often it perpetuates white supremacy very dangerously, very violently. So anyways, this op-ed was written in the Wall Street Journal, and then Angelo McLean wrote a response to it. Basically, this was actually the headline.
I can't wait.
"Social workers cooperate with police forces." That's his title. And he goes on.
This is written like recent.
This was June 15th. What is today? The 19th? This was 4 days ago.
Okay.
So he goes on to talk about how, you know, the NASW is all for strengthening the social work and police partnerships and how this can be an effective strategy in addressing behavioral health and mental health and substance abuse and homelessness. Mm-hmm. And social workers, get this, social workers help police fulfill their mission to protect and serve.
Oh my God.
He actually wrote that in print and then shared it with people. So like, again.
So, you know, one call to action right now. I'm going to ask all of you listening to write some op-ed responses, to email NASW.
Go tweet at them. Yeah.
Tweet at them. Like,
tell
show
them
that this is not acceptable, an acceptable position.
This is awful. Definitely.
So can we circle back to Dorothy Roberts and... Mm-hmm. Her article about abolishing the police and family regulation. So you said this just a second ago, and she says this, that regulating and destroying Black and brown and indigenous families in the name of child protection has been essential to the ongoing white supremacist nation building project. So child protective services or child welfare is designed to work that way. So taking money from the police when we defund the police and putting it into child welfare just perpetuates, it's going to result in more state surveillance and control of Black communities. So, you know, so think about this. If in your community there are these conversations about defunding the police, and if included in that there is our proposals to move some of that funding over to CPS, because we should be working to abolish all carceral institutions.
Yeah. And to go kind of complement that, the article, the original one in the Wall Street Journal by Naomi Schaefer Riley, I never heard this term before, but I guess activists have called this involvement of social workers in state violence and with the police Jane Crow.
Huh.
And Riley describes it as social workers who subject black mothers to low-level surveillance, going so far as some to call it harassment.
Yeah. Wow.
About like their fitness to be mothers and be parents.
Yeah. Mm. You know, when I was reading the article and kind of thinking about, again, our if we're real social workers, we're trying to work ourselves out of a job, and we are like committed to decolonizing social work, but also this country, right? So that got me thinking about participating in sort of carceral systems. And I just want to name this. I don't really want us to talk about it because it's a tangent, but I just like was thinking about how there are a lot of social workers too who work in the anti-human trafficking field, and the ways that those folks, I haven't heard anything public from people in that field, social workers in that field, say anything in support of the movement for Black Lives or defunding the police. And I think that's in part because those agencies and organizations work in very close partnership with the police. The solutions they lift up to human trafficking are all carceral. And I'm just noticing that.
Can I actually, I know you said you didn't want to get into it, but can I add an anecdote to this?
Yeah, okay.
So when I was a shelter manager, director at a shelter for domestic violence survivors of interpersonal violence, we actually had somebody who was a human trafficking survivor there, which isn't really a good fit in those sorts of places from what I've, you know, learned since then. But she was, as you can imagine, very, very traumatized. She was also an indigenous person and had a lot of flashbacks about like just seeing murders and all this stuff and people being dismembered and stuff like
That's awful.
Like really awful stuff.
Trauma.
And so like a police officer came to kind of do an assessment about this. I guess he worked with the human trafficking division or whatever, comes in, talks to this person, and then comes back and talks to staff, and he's like, oh yeah, she's talking about seeing all these dismembered bodies. There's just no way that could happen because, you know, people know about it. And I'm like, motherfucker, do you know how many missing indigenous women there are in this country and in Canada? Don't just... And he just dismissed it wholesale. Didn't even...
So he just didn't even acknowledge your comment.
Yeah. I was just like, because I didn't say...
I'm guessing you didn't say, hey,
I didn't
motherfucker.
Say motherfucker. Yeah. Guess what, motherfucker?
Guess what?
Yeah, I didn't say that, but I was just like, how would you know this? Why would he just, because he's just basing it on like her severe paranoia, which is what you get
when you've experienced that kind of trauma.
Yeah. And just was not taking it seriously. And I knew then, I was just like, we're fucked. Like they're not going to be any help for us.
Yeah.
And this is why, because they're super dismissive. And there is this like hyper masculinity that happens in that, where they just are coming in and they're not caregivers. They're just very, very fast and kind of trying to make decisions and solve crimes and shit and don't really care about like actual experiences of people.
Mm-hmm.
They're just there to try to close a case as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So anyways, I know you said you didn't want to get into it, but it just reminded me of the danger of trying to put police officers in social worker roles, because you get stuff like that.
Right.
You know, and I have firsthand.
And the danger of social workers collaborating with police.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, that police officer was working for some division that was, like, collaborating with the human trafficking, anti-human trafficking task force or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just, like, so super messed up.
Right. Anyways.
So let's move on.
Yeah.
So another voice I kind of want to lift up was this article by Sheila Vicaria, which has been making the rounds. And I will also make sure it gets shared on our social channels. But it's called Social Workers Belong in Police Departments is an Offensive Statement. So this short article that she wrote was a response to seeing a graphic that was making its rounds online that was created by the New York chapter of the NASW. And that it said that police or that social workers belong in police departments. That was what it said. And she was like, no. you know, she listed some really... I mean, kind of similarly to Dorothy Roberts, But she talks about how the suggestion that social workers should join precincts denies the reality that, like, doing this is fundamentally not going to change any of the harms that are inflicted on communities, and that there's, like, little evidence to show that the presence of social workers in a police department actually, you know, reduces or changes the use of lethal force against Black and Latinx and Indigenous people. It doesn't seem to have any impact on preventing the police to stop patrolling these communities or to stop serving the interests of gentrifiers. Social workers in police departments, she talks about, is not going to demilitarize them. So, like, okay, like I said earlier, maybe the social worker won't shoot you in your bed, but it doesn't change this rotten system.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, the police, it's like Angela Davis said, I don't know where to attribute the quote, but I've seen this quote from her that, like, in her community, they always knew that the police were there to protect white supremacy. Mm-hmm. And if you just take the police out of it, like, white supremacy still exists. White supremacy doesn't exist because of the police. The police exist because of white supremacy. Right. So if you take away the police, that problem causing that's still there.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, just like you said, putting social workers in there isn't actually going to address the white supremacy culture that they're rooted in.
No. And again, we should be asking ourselves, like, what it would take to work ourselves out of a job. And I think part of that is having the ability to vision a world that doesn't need police.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, what new policies or community systems would it take to create that world where our profession is obsolete?
In that same piece you referenced, Sheila Vicaria actually says as much, saying we should be asking ourselves this: what would it take to work ourselves out of a job rather than further entrenching ourselves in the harmful status quo of a violent system?
Yeah.
I mean, that's mic drop right there.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, for me, I'm coming around to this, like, idea that, like, I don't think our role is in these places.
I don't either.
I was kind of pondering this on the front porch earlier, and I was like, I think if you are a social worker at CPS, you should quit. You know, our neighbors have a sign. They've been protesting downtown a whole bunch, and they have a sign out on their front porch, and it says, "Good cops quit their jobs." You know, I think, like, do good social workers quit their jobs?
You know, this is kind of that coercive economy we have, right? Like, you have to have money, right? So, like, you have to go and sell yourself to do this stuff. But, like, I think that conversation has to happen. Is like, how can we liberate and pull ourselves out of this stuff? Like, just go do stuff differently, you know, start something new. And, you know, I really, gosh, this is going to sound like really mean. I don't know if it's mean, but, like, yeah, you're right. If you are in those jobs, you should be trying to figure out a way to get out of that job. And I know you need money, which is why you got to go somewhere else. Like,
yeah.
We have to make these things obsolete.
Yeah. I also am anticipating some, like, pushback from folks who are like, if I leave, then there's nobody left who's, like, trying to keep these kids in their homes. And I'm like, again, I know that's multiple things can be true at the same time.
Yep. Also, this is not the only thing that can help keep kids in their home.
That's right. Right? Like, maybe what if we were, like, throwing all of our energy into creating solutions for the fact that there's no affordable housing for folks, that there's, like, not, you know,
child care,
that, like, living wages don't exist, access to health care, like, is deplorable. Like, these are the reasons. I mean, the folks who get involved with Child Protective Services, as you remember from our previous episode on this, these are mostly people dealing with poverty problems, and most people who are Black and brown dealing with poverty problems. That's why CPS gets involved. They see that, like, you know, your electric is cut off, so then they say that you're unfit to parent, instead of being like, let me make sure that y'all have what you need so you can pay your light bill.
Yeah, I'm really glad you lifted that up, that it is...
Yeah, I'm already, though, there's problems. Like, I can already hear that, like, not all social workers.
I was while you were saying that, I was like, we're going to catch so much heat for that.
That's okay.
That's okay.
Throw it at me. I have been that person. Yeah. I worked at an agency here that, like, doled out money from HUD.
Yeah.
Like, I am totally complicit in this shit.
Likewise. I am too. Now, I really do think we're going to catch some heat for this, though. And the other thing that's going to happen is let's say social workers go and quit these jobs, and then the other argument that's going to come up is like, well, then they're just going to lower standards so they can hire people, and it's not going to be as trained and whatever. I'm like, what? So we're deprofessionalizing it? That's what I want to do too. And I know people hate it when we say that so much, but I am so for that. As a social worker who had to jump through those hurdles and stuff, I feel a moral obligation to make sure other people who want to be social workers don't have to do that.
Not just other people who want to be social workers,
but who are
the
already
people
doing
who should
it.
Be doing, who are doing community
yeah.
care.
Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, and that's what it takes. Okay.
Yeah.
What?
Well, I think there's just something about the way you said that, like, I can see that people saying that what you're saying is it's fine to abandon all the people in CPS and just let it eat itself. And maybe that is what you're saying. And maybe that's okay. I am just lifting. I'm holding that that sucks too, right? Like if everybody who's a social worker quits their job at CPS and then they hire a bunch of people who are also going to suck at that job, the families that are caught up in all of that are still going to suffer.
That is a good point. And that's kind of like recycling, right? Like what I do individually doesn't actually change the system that this is supposed to be helping. So yeah, I do. You are right about that. Like, if you do quit, it's not like the Department of Health or Family Services or Cabinet of Child Family-Based Services or whatever is just going to go away.
Right.
Like that's, it's kind of like the system's still there. It exists because white supremacy culture, it's a symptom of that.
So we just said you should quit your job and maybe also kind of said maybe you shouldn't quit your job.
I don't know. We're working through this.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's important to name that.
Yeah. This is how hard this is sometimes.
Yeah. We should be talking about it, though.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing I think we should all be doing, if we're not already, is kind of familiarizing ourselves with the platform that the Movement for Black Lives has put together, and specifically some points around police abolition. Lots of folks live in communities where there's an active Black Lives Matter chapter. And if you're not already supporting that work, I would recommend that you find out if that chapter exists where you live and you do that. But while this is complicated and hard terrain to navigate, there are concrete things that you can do for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so on the website for the Movement for Black Lives, they have an entire page about defunding the police and very clearly articulating unequivocally that they want to shift massive spending on police that do not keep us safe to reinvesting it in a shared vision of community safety that actually works. That's a little bit of the language that I've seen come out of the Minneapolis mm-hmm. City Council choosing to defund the police. But part of this is all rooted around the fact that the police don't keep us safe
mm-hmm.
and that piecemeal reform just is... that it doesn't work.
Kind of like what we talked about earlier.
Yeah, and they say here, they don't work well enough or fast enough. You cannot root out violent policing with narrow reforms designed to create change over time when our policing system itself is born out of white supremacy and decades of bad ideas gone unchecked.
Yeah, I think about people's real push for community review boards
mm-hmm.
of police. And so, like, if you're reading this platform the way I'm reading it, you know, advocating for a community review board for your police department is not going to get us where we need to go.
Yeah. And then they're also kind of thinking a few steps ahead and saying that by defunding police, this doesn't mean that you then do private or contract policing.
Oh, good. I'm glad that's mentioned because you know that's the next step.
Right.
People are always trying to privatize stuff.
I think a privatized police force is
even scarier.
Impossibly. Sounds even scarier. Yeah. And, you know, taking that money and reinvesting it in, you know, communities and health and human services that would address the poverty that, as we've talked about, is often the root of the things that people get in trouble for
mm-hmm.
that we were just talking about with child protective services or what I've heard described as people committing crimes against poverty or crimes of poverty where like you're starving or your brain's been hijacked by addiction. So you're just, you know, you can't really control your behaviors, which wouldn't necessarily be as exacerbated if poverty wasn't the motivating force behind it.
Yeah. So familiarize yourself with this platform and what can you be doing to to lift up the voices of the Black leaders in your community who are advocating for abolition.
Yeah. And some simple local steps, too. See what the city's budget is and how much of that is going to police departments. Contact your local officials. Rally other people to go and do that. I know electoral politics is very, very limited and corrupt, but sometimes, too, it's like kind of white people talking out against white supremacy culture. Like, sometimes that silence of not saying stuff to your elected officials, those elected officials might just take that silence as tacit agreement or approval. So it's our job to make them really uncomfortable.
Yeah. And speaking of elected officials, I kind of want to ask a favor of all of you. So some of you, I hope most of you know this, but Breonna Taylor was an EMS worker, an essential worker, and a beautiful human being who deserves to still be here. And the police in Louisville, Kentucky murdered her in her bed when they entered her apartment because of a no-knock warrant, looking for drugs and somebody who didn't even live there, who was actually already in police custody. And right now, Louisville is basically on fire. Folks have been protesting in the streets. The police have responded terribly. They have tear gassed people and arrested people every day. And it turns out that because the police union is so strong, I guess the mayor of Louisville doesn't have the authority to fire these police.
It was in the contract, yeah.
So the person who has authority now to get anything done is our attorney general here in Kentucky, Daniel Cameron. And as much pressure that can be put on him as possible to make him do the right thing, we would appreciate it. So fellow social workers, if you can write him, call his office, and make it really hard for him to ignore this.
And I will say, just right before we started recording this, one of the officers was fired.
Yeah.
Today.
So now he needs to be charged.
All three of them need to be charged with murder. And even though this officer today was fired, as far as I've understood the police contract, it might still be possible for this officer to sue the city to get his job back. Like, that's written in the contract. So, like, this might just be ceremonial.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely not justice. Like you said, these people are, I mean, it's been almost 3 months now, and this is the first action that has happened as a consequence that they faced as a result of murdering her.
Yeah. I have a couple of final thoughts, but I don't, is there more that you'd like to say sort of about this topic about social workers being embedded in police departments or?
No, just don't do it.
Just don't do it. So, something that, you know, has been also floating around on the internet, you may have seen in a meme format, but it's also the title of an article written by Trey Johnson that was in the Washington Post. But it says, when Black people are in pain, white people join book clubs. And I want to say that, like, that's, like, super true. And I'm seeing a whole lot of that in my feeds of folks who are just stepping into this for the first time or being public about it, and the response is to, like, read books about racism, watch documentaries, literally join book clubs. And I certainly think that especially white and non-Black social workers should be immersing themselves in media created by Black folks, which also, just as an aside, isn't all about pain, right? Like, you should also be reading stories about, like, happy Black folks.
Black,
right?
Joy should be supported as well.
But I just want to, like, push you all that if that's been your response lately, is to kind of turn within so that you can learn and learn and learn and learn. It's like, what are you gonna do with that? And to bring it all the way back to the way back of our episodes where we talked about decolonize is not a metaphor, and that journal article, and that one of the critiques of settlers from that article was what they called return to innocence. And you reminded me that the kind of quote they used was, free your mind and the rest will follow. Basically, settlers and also white people getting caught up in the, like, forever I'm gonna learn forever. If I understand and know things, then things are better. That's just not true.
You're never going to know everything, and you're never going to be prepared for every scenario. And I think also this kind of white supremacy thing of focusing on, like, the written word and like textual learning and stuff like that, experience is also learning. And so you're just going to have to jump in sometimes, whether you're unsure or not. I say this because I'm guilty of it. I've been guilty of it. I've delayed because I didn't feel prepared. And we just have to, sometimes doing something is better than doing perfect thing.
Yeah. Oh no, that's all I got.
All right then.
I hope this is a conversation. I mean, it's useful for me to kind of work these things out loud. I hope that it was useful to you all. And I know that we maybe kind of disagreed a little bit more with each other this episode, or maybe offered up some contradictions, but you know, that's, this shit's hard.
But we have to figure it out.
We do.
If we're going to be social workers and actually decent, we have to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, until next time, I guess.
I guess.